I'm very happy to start the show today by telling you that this past weekend, Keith Boyd arrived in Cairo. And if you don't know who that is or why it matters, it means you've probably missed our previous conversations with the man who set off last year to run from Cape Town to Cairo, hopefully in world record time. Keith is a joint British and South African citizen. He grew up in this country. He is passionate about South Africa's future, and he's particularly passionate about creating opportunities for young people. He runs a non-profit called Rainbow Leaders, and one of the things he is most concerned about is the voter apathy in the younger age bracket, something he is determined to try and shake loose. And one of the ways of doing that is by putting his own body on the line. In July of last year, he set off determined to break the world record for traversing this continent on foot. He is hoping that that effort will inspire young South Africans to vote in the coming elections, or at least to register as voters in advance. And the last time we spoke to Keith, it was, I think, December last year. He had made it as far as southern Ethiopia. He was facing some challenges around getting his relief vehicle into the country, and let's just say that things got a little bit wild thereafter. And his arrival in Cairo this past weekend was by no means a given, nor is it actually the end of his journey. But I'm going to allow him to explain why that is. Firstly, Keith, welcome back to Cape Talk. And secondly, congratulations on making it to Cairo. It's been an epic adventure, and it's lovely to have you back on the show again.
Thanks, but I'm glad to be back talking to you and your listeners.
When we last spoke, you had literally just crossed the border into Ethiopia, Keith, and a whole lot of challenges lay ahead of you which hadn't been anticipated. When I spoke to you in July before you left, you were worried about blisters and the possibility of malaria and the possibility of food poisoning. Attempted kidnapping did not appear on the list of things you were preparing for, but I believe that's what you faced. Tell us what happened next, Keith.
Yeah, so you're quite right. Southern Ethiopia, the vehicle eventually caught up with me about a week after I entered Ethiopia. Quite a logistical nightmare. I got as far as Addis. It's about 800 kilometers north of the border with Kenya.
Yeah.
And then we got halted. There was quite a lot of crime and lawlessness north of Addis Ababa. And so we had three separate attempts to try and get through in the north. On the second attempt, I and our Ethiopian videographer were accosted by gunmen armed with fully automatic assault rifles. And they bundled us into a little three-wheeler. And they were trying to get us to move away from the road when they did eventually stop. They tried to get us to move away from the road. And, if you get half a kilometer away from the road, you might as well be 100 miles from anywhere. Because the police or the military just won't find you in those rural areas. And then you have a full-blown kidnapping situation. So the two things they wanted me to do was to move away from the road and to call Shadley, our Cape Town-based, Cape Townian rescue paramedic who's been with me on most of the journey.
Yeah.
And Shadley's a wizened old street-smart guy. He's a year younger than me, so he's a youngster of 56 years old. Not much ruffles his hair anymore. I think that is the one benefit of being older. But the long and the short of it is they were trying to get me to phone him to bring the pickup vehicle back. Shadley had managed to get away. And Shadley was actually unaware we were in trouble.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at the time. But I just was not going to phone and bring Shadley back into that net. So that resulted in him getting a bit frustrated with me and clobbering me around a bit. And one of the things I thought I would never say happened to me was I'd be clobbered on the head with a hand grenade. But now I can say that.
Sure.
Not with any pride, but it is true, and it's pretty damn weird. But the long and short of it is, we managed to calm things down. I think being older, I probably have had a lot more time to understand people. And these guys were younger and a bit crazy and wild. And I managed to, turn them having complete control into a situation where I could at least ask them questions.
Yeah.
And they would at least answer through the videographer, who was, as I say, Ethiopian and Amharic speaking. And then you go from asking questions to then making requests, and then from requests to almost making demands. But it's about changing that power balance over time. And over about 20, 30 minutes, I'm sorry, I did lose track of time. We managed to calm them down, and then Shadley appeared out of the blue. He arrived back with a pickup, completely unaware that we were actually in trouble.
Yeah.
And But by then, I'd kind of done a deal, and we agreed that we would pay these guys $1,000. They claimed to be part of a rebel movement called FANO, F-A-N-O, in Ethiopia, but I can't say if they were, or they were just bandits.
Opportunistic, yeah, yeah.
Sure. Exactly.
Keith,
exactly.
What an experience. I mean, thank heavens you got out of it relatively unscathed, bar the incident with the grenade. And obviously, I would imagine hugely traumatic once you sort of were back within a safe area and could think back on what you'd been through. What did that mean for your ability to keep going? Because this is what's become quite a serious factor in your ongoing quest to achieve the world record. It meant that your trip had to be interrupted, didn't it?
Exactly. So we had to stop there. Now, remember, we couldn't move forward or back. So we went and moved into a very, you know, basic pension, kind of bed and breakfast place next to an army base. We couldn't go back to Addis because that would have been dangerous as well. There was a lot of lawlessness around. We had a Cape Town registered bucky in very bright South African flag colors. If you've seen our rainbow vehicle on our Instagram account, so it's impossible to miss. And, you know, we are Farangis. You know, they see us as foreigners, calling us Farangi, and they know that we probably have, you know, a fair bit of money in Ethiopian terms, that is.
Yeah.
So we are plant kidnapping kind of targets. And so we had to stay put for a while. And then the Ethiopian military agreed to give us a military escort, which they then did for about a further 100 kilometers. And it was a staggered kind of, we staggered forward as we could, fall in with a bunch of soldiers who were moving forward on this road that I had to run. But eventually this one colonel, this senior army officer said, this far and no further. Things are just too bad ahead. I'm not taking you any further.
Sure.
It's just too risky and that's it. So at that point we said, right, we're going to go back to Addis. The cameraman, the Ethiopian videographer, you know, he by this time is, you know, I think the beating and the hostage taking affected him psychologically. I get it. He's much, much younger. And so he decided he didn't want to continue either. So they left us without an interpreter, effectively, or videographer. So we tried again with the military and they said, look, could you come back in a couple of months? So we checked with Guinness World Records and they said, look, go for it. You know, you've repositioned. We repositioned to the southern border of Sudan by aeroplane and by car. We managed to kind of dodge through that area or part of that area, not the whole area. Then we got to the southern border of Sudan and then we managed to run through war-torn Sudan, you know.
Sure, which was the one area you'd thought you were going to have to avoid, Keith, going into this.
Exactly, Pippa. We were really, you know, logically, we were most worried about Sudan. But I think the difference with Sudan is it's a conventional war. So, you know, the battlefronts are defined. There are obviously breakthroughs. But if we had to run a long 1,800-kilometer route as opposed to about 1,250 kilometers if you went through Khartoum, which we could not do. But now, you know, this week I want to fly back to Addis. We're in touch with the government there, and the South African embassy folks are helping us, as they have done in the past. They've been magnificent. I think there's a feeling that we do want to get this record back for South Africa. There's a feeling that everybody does want to get the youth involved, the youth of South Africa involved in democracy. And I think people are putting their shoulders to the wheel, and hopefully we'll get a result with the Ethiopian government to give us the protection, the military escort that we're going to need in order to be able to complete this run.
Keith, I mean, how hopeful are you that it might still happen? Because your window on time, certainly in terms of getting the record, it's got to be tightening, I would imagine. What sort of limitations are you looking at if you're still going to do it within record time?
Yeah, no, good question. So to start, if you might recall, original goal was 280 days.
Yeah.
The world record is 318 days. So I wanted to beat the record by 38 days. I'm now on day 272, and I only have 500-odd kilometers to run, so 10 or 11 days of running left.
Okay.
So if I can reposition to the point where I had to stop the run last time, within the next 3 days, we should get this done in 286, 287 days, which will still knock more than a month off the world record. But if we have further delays, you know, you're quite right. This is really at risk.
Okay, so it's a tight window, but Keith, you're the kind of guy who doesn't take no for an answer and doesn't give up easily, which is why 10,000 kilometres later, you've had the experience of running into Cairo. I mean, what did it feel like? It must have been a bit bittersweet to get to what was meant to be the end point of the journey and be able to celebrate that fact, but also know that the job wasn't done yet. Talk to us about the emotions you felt in Cairo.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, Tuka, it was for weeks, you know, since ever we repositioned, I've had this cloud hanging over my head about, can we get this done? Is this all going to come to naught? And, you know, we had some really tough times in Sudan, but yeah. But on some of those moments, I'd be thinking, is this worth it? You know, is this really worth it? But I think the lesson in it all is that in life, if you've got a business, you know, you're really struggling, and any listeners out there that run a business or are having a tough time in any area of their life, just remember, you just need to put one foot in front of another, because the minute you stop, you've lost. But if you keep just moving forward in your business, in your home life, in your studies at school, if you just keep getting to your desk and doing your work every day, you've got a chance it's all going to end well. So, you know, I'm very hopeful that we'll still get it done, but the bittersweetness has been here for some time since we got to the southern border of Sudan on the 14th of February. But yeah, I mean, it was wonderful. The welcome at the Cairo Tower, my family was there, some friends, the Egyptian government have been just outstanding in supporting us.
Okay.
You know, in terms of police escorts and giving us access to the tower, and I've been very, very pleased with the hospitality that we've had in Egypt.
That's great to hear. Keith, another Keith on our WhatsApp line is asking whether you would consider tackling other continents after this one. I mean, obviously this is the continent that means the most to you in your heart. But has this experience perhaps inspired you to keep on at it?
No, look, I'm a socioeconomic activist. I'm not a runner. If the truth be told, you know, I'm not a runner at all. And I mean, you know, I will never forget the way you disparagingly looked at my ankle frame at our first interview.
Oh, nonsense.
and you thought, and I also, this guy's not a runner, and you are right, that I'm not a runner. I'm a socioeconomic activist. You know, this run has all been about building a platform to say to people, regardless of the hand you're dealt in life, if you want to stare in the rearview mirror and say, I wish I was stronger, I wish I was younger, I wish I was thinner, I wish I was fitter, nothing's going to change for the better. But regardless of the hand that you've been dealt in life, if you put your mind to something, you would be amazed at what you can achieve. And I think that is what this was about, to try and create that platform of hope, that platform of success that would inspire South Africans generally, but most specifically inspire young South Africans to embrace democracy. You know, and this run has also brought it to light that South Africa, we are so fantastically positioned. Constitution, independent and free press, independent judiciary, public protector, national prosecuting authority. We've got all the tools, all the building blocks of a wonderful democratic system. So the only thing that's wrong with our democracy at the moment is people aren't engaged enough in it, and not enough people are voting. So that's the only reason I run. I'm not running anywhere after this. Finished.
I'm kind of relieved, Keith, because you're in your late 50s. To put your body through what you've done in the last year is absolutely remarkable, and I salute you 100% for what you've done. Have you had injury troubles or niggles or worries along the way? I mean, it's particularly, as you say, you're not somebody who has spent decades out there on the road doing marathons every weekend for fun. This was a new experience for you. How's the body held up?
Yeah, I mean, on the important stuff, like my cardiovascular system has held up. Remember, yep. I have got a genetic heart condition as well, which is quite serious. So that's the most important thing. Internal organs, no kind of bleeding and stuff. You'd often pass some blood in your urine with distance running. I didn't have any of that. I got very sick with water poisoning, with really a gastro thing in Sudan. That laid me down for 5 days. Other than that, I didn't have a single sick day. And I didn't run because of injury. I would have days where I would have to stumble, walk, do what I'd call an Ironman shuffle. But I was able to move forward. And, you know, the injuries have moved around. If you see me in the morning, I walk like an 85-year-old. You know, I really like an unhealthy 85-year-old. Sorry, a respect to all the 85-year-olds who are still sprightly and so on. But, you know, every morning and every evening, I look like I'm kind of crippled, really. And this is the second day of non-running for a long time. And my legs are still sore, but I'm able to walk without limping and hobbling, if you know what I mean. So it's enormously painful every day, at the start and end of the day specifically. But yeah, the body's amazing, Pippa. Even more amazing than I thought, the human body, you know.
It really is, but so is the mind that's driving it. Keith, I have no doubt you're going to get back to Ethiopia to finish those final kilometres, and we'll be keeping an eye on the Instagram feed and backing you the whole way. I look forward to the final conversation at the very end of the challenge when it is behind you in your rearview mirror for the last time, and we can celebrate the very, very end of the journey. But for now, Keith, I think there's a lot to celebrate in having just made it to Cairo, and we wish you all the best as you try and get all the ducks in the row to do that last leg in Ethiopia. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Pippa.
Great to chat to you again, Keith Boyd. And remember, please follow him on Instagram. You're looking for Rainbow Runner ZA, or you can check out his NGO, rainbowleaders.org.za. He's posting beautiful photographs and stories along the way as he runs, and some really just lovely photos reflecting the trip so far. We hope it is a trip he is able to finish. I have no doubt he is going to do it, and look forward to the conversation at the very end.